And our last interview in this hour is a conversation Steve had recently with Raymond Moody, the famously controversial psychiatrist who coined the term near-death experience. Moody spent nearly 40 years studying death and dying, trying to figure out what happens after death. He's reached the age to look backward a bit, which he does in a new memoir called Paranormal, My Life in Pursuit of the Afterlife.
Well, let's start at the very beginning. When did you first get interested in near-death experiences?
Well, my big hero in life, I gotta say, is Plato. I was not raised in a religious family. I was went to the University of Virginia at age 18. The first philosophy course I took, just within literally the first few days, reading Plato's Republic, I was hooked. And the Republic culminates in the experience of a warrior named Ur, who was believed dead on the battlefield, but inconveniently sat up at his funeral and told his colleagues about moving away from his body through passageways into another world in which he saw his life reviewed. This was a very well-known phenomenon among the early Greek philosophers. They called these people the revenants, who were popularly believed to have died and come back. But I thought this was just a Greek idea. And in 1965, 3 years later, I heard that Dr. George Ritchie, who was a professor of psychiatry at UVA at that time, had been pronounced dead twice some years before. I went to a student group where he was talking about this, and I was blown away. I got my PhD in philosophy at the age of 24, and I started teaching philosophy, and very quickly began to hear these stories from students and from my fellow faculty members. And then the word spread in this little town about, oh, this professor over there is talking with people who almost died. And then these...
Wait, so you're saying that back when you were teaching philosophy, you had not even become a psychiatrist yet, and you were already talking with people about near-death experiences?
Oh, yes, I got into this not from the medical angle, but from the philosophy angle. So these movers and shakers in this little town, you know, the respectable businessmen in these clubs. I never went to one of these things. That there weren't, after my talk, one or two, or in one case, seven of these men came up, and all introducing themselves with the same words. It's like, Dr. Moody, I've never told anybody this, but. So by about 1970, I was saying, whoa, this is something here that has been missed.
But this is fascinating because, I mean, this is really before the whole idea of near-death experiences was in the public consciousness. I mean, in fact, you're the one who coined the word near-death experiences.
Yes. When I was still in medical school, I kept lecturing on this to medical societies. And unbeknownst to me, at one of these meetings, there was a very nice young reporter there. And to my astonishment, a very accurate rendition of what I had said appeared in a newspaper. A publisher called me and asked me if I would do a book on it.
Now, there are scientific explanations for these. There was a book that I've just seen recently trying to explain all of this through basic brain chemistry, saying that these experiences are triggered by lack of oxygen, that field of vision sort of starts to go, which might explain the experience of light, and it might be inducing some sort of REM state. Can we explain this from the perspective of neuroscience?
Most of the people who write these books allegedly explaining these experiences neurophysiologically don't actually talk to patients. They read sort of secondhand accounts and then speculate. But perhaps more importantly, all of the elements that we identify as a near-death experience also occur quite frequently to the bystanders at the bedside of somebody else who does die.
Wait, so you're saying that someone, let's say my mother is dying, I might share her experience somehow?
Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely. People at the bedside, for example, may tell us that at the point somebody dies, they see what seems to be a transparent replica of the person, sort of stand up and move away from the body. Other people tell us that as their loved one died, that they themselves exit their body and they accompany their dying loved one partway toward this light. People commonly describe the light filling up the room as somebody is passing away, or saying that they perceive the spirits of the dying person's dead relatives and friends sort of coming into the room to take them away. And most remarkably of all, have cases where the bystanders empathically co-lived the dying life review of the person who passed away. And so the bystanders not being ill or injured, there's no question there of compromised blood flow to their brain, and yet they report the same experience.
How many stories like this have you heard? I mean, are you talking a few? Are you talking many?
I'm sure by now many hundreds. First one of these I heard was from one of my own medical school professors in 1972 or 73, who had an experience like this when she was resuscitating her mother. And then throughout the 70s and 80s, I began to hear about them. I was getting ready to write this up in 1994. And incredibly, right at that same time, my mother died. And my wife and I and my family, we were there, and we had this experience. I don't think a demographic study has been done yet, but I'm fairly confident in predicting that if such a study were done, that what it would show was that these empathic or shared death experiences are as common or perhaps even more common than near-death experiences.
So you said you had one of these experiences when your mother died. Can you describe what happened?
Well, as my mother was dying, we were no longer in three-dimensional space. I know that sounds crazy, but then I can find hundreds of other people who have had that same experience. These are very inadequate words, but it's as though that suddenly, rather than being in a three-dimensional cubicle, which is like a hospital room, it was like we were in this funnel, or if you had two inverted funnels that were connected at the narrow end, and we were in this surging, whirling space of energy and light. Now, I say light because that's the closest thing to it, but it's not light. It's love, or I don't know. Words are failing me.
Can you explain this? I mean, what do you think is going on?
I don't know. Probably we don't have the cognitive equipment to make sense of this. You know, I've always been very comfortable with saying, I don't know. I mean, we don't know how to explain these experiences. That's the fact.
You know, what you've been talking about, I think the vast majority of neuroscientists would say, is not possible. Is what you're talking about, is this in the realm of science, or have we left science here?
We haven't yet arrived at science. You know, if you look at the history of science, all sorts of questions that initially weren't thought of as scientifically resolvable eventually make it in. But before they do, there's usually a conceptual revolution. Well, I think that's where we are with the afterlife question.
Okay, you have talked with hundreds, thousands of people who've had these near-death experiences. Do you think there will be a Raymond Moody after your physical body dies, or a Raymond Moody in some sense of a distinct entity?
I've never liked the name Raymond anyway. And it's the thing that seems most highly implausible to me about the performances of mediums, for example, is that it's almost an insult to me that Uncle John could be brought back from the beyond with his proper name. Now, if you think about it, what that implies is that a proper name is a transcendental part of speech. That's a leap for me. I think that your ego identity is, I'm not anticipating having that anymore, no.
Raymond Moody, talking with Steve about his new memoir, Paranormal, My Life in Pursuit of the Afterlife.
What's the use of having muscles when your life hangs by a thread? If you ain't got no red corpuscles, Jack, you dead. You've been always kicking, but you stubbed your toes when you ups and kicks the bucket, just like old man Mose. When you get no kicks from loving and you blow your top instead, it's a fact that you ain't living, Jack, you dead.